Micah tells us about how Israel has gotten lost.
The prophets are sent to the people of Israel in the hope that they would come back home, that they would find their way back, and they would be the people that God called them to be. So in this moment of wandering and of disarray and of waywardness, Micah asks a question to the people of Israel, a question meant to wake them up, to help them remember maybe who they are and who they're called to be. And this is the question. What does the Lord require of you? It's a probing question. It's a provocative question. And it's not just for Israel. It's for us too. What does the Lord require of you, of us? It's a question we're going to hold on to for the next few weeks together. And today, as we consider that question, I want to offer three words that I hope will provide a framework for where we're headed here. See, this question, I think, invites us to recalibrate. It implores us to innovate, and it calls us to collaborate. Recalibrate, innovate, collaborate. I'll explain those here kind of as we go along. Let's take the first one of those three. What does the Lord require of you? You know, Israel, in Micah 6, actually answers the question. They're pretty sure that they know the answer. Right before, in verses 6 and 7 of chapter 6, Israel says, hey, we know what God requires. Any of you ever read this chapter? It's a very interesting little section. They go, we know. We know what we should bring to God. God requires sacrifice at the temple. God requires religious observance. And the bigger, the better. So Israel starts listing off this growing set of options for what they could offer as a sacrifice. And they start with a calf, a year-old calf. It's a pretty nice offering, actually. Truth be told, in that day and time, not a lot of people had a year-old calf to offer as a sacrifice. This was a pretty prized possession. So they start there, but then they amp it up. I don't know, what if we offer God 1,000 rams? 1,000 rams. You imagine? 1,000 rams. And then, no. What if we offer God 10,000 rivers of oil? Wow. That'd be an impressive agricultural and engineering feat to offer 10,000 rivers of oil, right? What if we bring those and those are poured on the altar? And I got to tell you, you know, to our 21st century ears, animal sacrifice, it's like, ooh, no thanks. You know, glad that system is no longer the way that it is, right? We're not all that interested in animal sacrifice. But in that day and time, those answers were actually like on their face. Those are pretty good answers. Yeah, bring a really big sacrifice. Do the right religious thing. After all, this is the system God had set up. Then Micah throws a curveball and says this. No, God has shown you, O mortal, I love that, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. 1,000 rams is not what God requires. Not if it's empty ritual. 10,000 rivers of oil, again, would be an impressive feat, but it is not what God desires. Not if it doesn't lead to your life overflowing with mercy and justice. See, worship is meant to change us, and when it doesn't, when it's something we do like this, when we come here to just check a box or to get something out of it for ourselves, it becomes empty. And God doesn't seem to be terribly interested in it, no matter how grand the gesture might be. No, God has shown you, O mortal, what is good. What does the Lord require of you? That you would act justly, love mercy and walk humbly with your God. See, Micah is helping Israel to recalibrate to what matters. And the first thing that they're invited to recalibrate towards is a life of justice. What does that look like? What does it mean to act justly? This may seem fairly straightforward. I don't know. Maybe you could rattle off a bunch of things that this might mean. In Micah, interestingly, it has a lot to do with economics. Read verses 10, 11, and 12 of chapter 6, and you'll see that the rich and powerful in Israel have rigged the economic system. Now, this is riveting stuff, but hang with me here. You know, they've rigged the economic system to benefit themselves. They've set it up in a way to ensure that they remain in power and that they get resources. And so, for Micah, to act justly meant that you would stop rigging the system, that you would work for a system that would benefit everyone, that you would live in a way that brought truth, not lies, generosity, not extortion. It's part of what it means to act justly. It has something to do with economics. It's kind of interesting. Micah, of course, isn't the only person who talks about this. You can read almost any of the prophets, and you're going to find them saying something similar. In Isaiah chapter 1, we read that to act justly means to lift up those who have been oppressed and marginalized, to defend the vulnerable, the widow, the orphan, those who don't have a voice. In Jeremiah 5, it means to defend the rights of the poor. And on it goes. In short, if you were to try and maybe sum it all up, here's what I would say it means to act justly according to the prophets in the Old Testament. It means to make choices with your life that lead to the flourishing of other human beings. To make choices with your life that lead to the flourishing of other human beings. That's what it means to act justly. And I will tell you what, friends. It is hard for me to express to you how much joy and gratitude I have for you, because you, throughout the years, have been an example to me of what it means to act justly. You have helped me to understand that and to see that, and you've pushed me and challenged me to think differently, to be open to new ways of seeing how this gets lived out. I think this is part of who the branch is. I think we're a church that cares about justice, but we don't do it perfectly. We've missed the mark, and sometimes, actually, I think we even just forget about justice. Corporately, maybe even individually. I look at my own life, and I think about how busy I get, and just frankly, how busyness keeps me from thinking about justice, acting justly. I look at my life and I think about how comfortable I prefer to be. I prefer comfort. And justice, facing injustice, often involves a disruption of my comfort. And I don't like that. So I often shy away from addressing injustice. Sometimes, if I look at my life, I'm lulled into apathy, or I'm paralyzed by the scope and the depth of injustice in the world. And so, if that's you at all, if you know what I'm talking about, if you can relate to me at all, my hope is that this morning, one of the things that Micah's question does for you and for me is it helps us recalibrate our lives to what matters. It calls us again. It reminds us again of what matters to God. And part of what matters to God is that we would live lives that help other human beings flourish, that the choices you make every day would lead to the flourishing of other people. What does the Lord require? It's a question that invites us to recalibrate, and I think it also implores us to innovate. Let me explain what I mean by that. You know, God's call to act justly is simple. It's two words. It is not easy. It's like ice skating backwards. Ice skating backwards is just skating in a different direction. That's all it is. It sounds simple, but it is not easy. It's not easy. And I think maybe acting justly sounds simple, sounds straightforward. We go, yeah, right. But to actually do it, you start to see again the scope and the scale of injustice, and before long, we feel paralyzed. We feel like we're in the middle of a forest without a compass, and we don't know what to do or what way to go, how to respond. We feel lost and overwhelmed. Which is why I think if we are to act justly, if we're to be those kinds of people in the world, we need God's Spirit to empower us with new ideas. We need God's creativity to help us dream new dreams. We need God to unlock our imagination about what is possible and reignite our hope to breathe life into the dry bones that we often carry around. Because here's the thing. Injustice is rarely broken by maintaining the status quo. In fact, injustice, I think, often prefers the status quo, wants things to stay exactly as they are. It's working quite well. Thank you very much. Justice requires new ideas, new dreams, hope, innovation. I just think about all of the biblical examples of how this kind of gets played out and how true it is. Think about Paul. Remember that crazy New Testament dude? Started lots of churches, traveled, you know, Europe and Asia. And what's Paul doing everywhere he goes? As he brings the gospel, as he brings the good news, as he brings God's invitation to live a life of fullness and justice, what's Paul doing? He's constantly innovating. Do you know Paul's story? He goes to this city and he does this, X, because X kind of works in this city. And then he goes to this city and he tries X and it doesn't work. So he comes up with Y. And then he goes to another city and he tries X, that doesn't work, Y, that doesn't work, so he does Z. Paul's constantly innovating. I don't know, after Z, it's trouble. AA, I think that's what happens in Excel. You know, you start a new account, AA. Right? He's constantly innovating. What about Jesus sending out the 72 disciples and then sending out the 12? Do you know these stories in the gospel? They're pretty crazy. Jesus sends out 72, and then a little bit later he sends out the 12. And when he does, he sends them with no money, no extra gear. And he just says, go. Go to the towns and villages nearby. Share the good news, the gospel, that God's kingdom has come, that heaven is coming to earth, that justice is going to break in, and see what happens. See what happens. Risk, try, be creative, be ingenuitive, be innovative. Just go, give it a shot. And yes, Jesus says, sometimes you'll risk and you will fail. That's all right. Shake the dust off your feet when things don't go the way you want them to go and go to the next town. Or I think about Acts chapter 6. Here's one more biblical example, right? The church is just getting started. In fact, it's not even fair to call it the church because it's just like a collection of people. They have no building, no denomination. They're just people sharing life, worshiping together, serving, sharing their possessions. And then this problem arises. Word comes that the Jewish widows are being cared for because there was a system set up to do that, but the Gentile widows were not. And in the face of this unintentional, I think, injustice, but an injustice nonetheless, the church does what?
it innovates. It dreams a new dream. It opens itself up to God's Spirit, and it comes up with a way to respond to that injustice. See, this is what God's people have always done. When faced with problems that seem overwhelming, when heading into uncharted territory, God's people rely on God's Spirit to breathe new ideas and new ways forward to address the injustice in front of them. This is exactly what I've seen so many of you do. I think about Dave and Trina Rukas. I think about how Dave and Trina started inviting neighbors into their home every week for dinner, and how that grew and relationships developed, and over time their little part of the neighborhood grew in strength as people knew one another better and began to share life. And then about 6 months ago, they started to dream and wonder what it would be like to invest in the local elementary school that's right across the street from them. What would it be like to send their kids there? What would it be like to address the economic or the educational injustice? And you can talk to Dave and Trina. You can also read an article in the Rapidian about them. You can talk with them and hear about how God breathed a new idea into their life. The Spirit invited them to take a risk and try something new. And as a result, human flourishing has come. Justice has come into the world. I think about how so many of you care about your neighborhood. You invite people into your homes. I think about how you have block parties, how a few of you check in, maybe more than I know. I hear stories, though, of some of you checking in on your elderly neighbors and making sure they're okay. So many of you care about your neighborhood. In fact, there's three people at the branch who are on the boards of their neighborhood associations. It's pretty cool, right? They're like infiltrating, from the ground up, and they're working to bring a neighborhood, to help create a neighborhood that is just, where people flourish. I think about Elena Verkaik, who about a month ago stood up here and told us about how her classroom decided to do something about the Rohingya crisis in Myanmar. And she was making these ornaments. This sweet girl has this innovative idea along with her classmates. The Spirit of God breathes this new idea into her. And justice comes into the world. I think about a conversation I had with another pastor here in Grand Rapids who's becoming a friend. He's on the northwest side at a church called the Urban Edge. Troy Evans is his name. And, Troy, I was telling him about the branch's sense of call toward racial equity. And how we have no idea really what to do or what it's going to mean for us down the road. But there is this call, this sense that we are being moved by God's Spirit to think about and to work towards racial equity. And Troy, who's an African American, looked at me and said, "Man, you guys are crazy." And I came to realize after getting over my shock that he meant that in the best sort of way. Like, you guys are crazy. You're crazy. You could have just let the status quo continue on. You didn't have to face this thing. You didn't have to talk about it. You didn't have to think about it. You could have just gone on with things as they were. He said, that's a choice you completely had, but you're choosing, you're crazy enough to choose the pursuit of justice, to risk to trust God's Spirit into this uncharted territory. I think we are a little crazy. I think it's one of the best things about this place. That people hop on neighborhood association boards and they invite people into their homes and they talk about things that are difficult and they face oppression and they work towards justice. I think it is one of the best things in the world that we are crazy and that we're willing to risk. We're willing to try new things. We're willing to even fail in this pursuit of justice. So let me ask you this question. I wonder if today you're sitting here and you're listening to me and you're feeling tired. Justice sounds fine to you. You're on board. You like justice. It's good. But you're tired. Or you're without an idea or without direction. And I wonder if Micah's question, you know, what does the Lord require of you, if it wouldn't only help recalibrate, but I wonder if it would also breathe new life into you. If you're feeling like dry bones today, if today might be a day in which God breathes new life, new ideas, reignites hope, that justice can in fact come to this world. I wonder, would you ask for that this morning? Would you ask God to give you hope, an idea, a newness, a dream? What does the Lord require of you, of us? I think that question, again, invites us to recalibrate it. It implores us to innovate. And I think it compels us to collaborate. You know, when Jesus sent out the 72 and sent out the 12, he sent them out in pairs. Did you know that? Not alone, but together. Two people collaborating together, working together, locking arms together in this crazy mission of going to these villages. You know, Paul gets all of the attention. He does. He's kind of like the star that gets lifted up. But look at Paul's letters, and you will see that he was never a lone ranger. John Mark, Barnabas, Silas, Priscilla, Aquila, Timothy, Lydia, names of people that Paul worked with, people who innovated with him, who took risk with him, who stepped into an unknown future together. See, heaven coming to earth, justice flowing like a mighty river, happens through collaboration, through relationship. Men and women working together, Jews and Gentiles locking arms. And again, this is what I've seen so many of you do. The branch is a unique place where we innovate and we risk and we fail and then we risk again. It's one of the unique things about this church. And I think it's also unique the level to which we are willing to collaborate. You know, Dave and Trina's story is not a solo one. Nor is Andy's or Teresa's and Kyle's and Chris's and Matt and Mary's, these people who are engaging in their neighborhood in specific ways. Nor is Elena's work in her classroom. It's together with her peers and it's with you. See, from the beginning, from day one here at the branch, we've believed that this world would be more like the world God created it to be if we locked arms with each other here internally and if we collaborated with anyone outside of these walls who was willing to pursue justice with us. Whether they came from the same denomination or not, whether we sang the same songs or had the same doctrinal creeds, we have been willing to partner with other people. I think it's in our DNA. Do you know how we started? All right, we were birthed out of partnership. with a congregation made of mostly senior citizens who often looked at what we were doing as a young church and just scratched their heads. What we were doing didn't make sense to them so often, but they were willing to partner with us. And that has continued. Greenhouse Church, some of you might remember, River Tree, now CCGR and the Nepali-speaking community, right? In our story, woven throughout it, is this willingness, I'd say even more than that, a desire to partner. But it hasn't just been here, outside of these walls. I think about this collaborative we're in the neighborhood with CRC churches and non-denominational churches and neighborhood associations and business associations and the Croc Center. Did you know we're in this collaborative? We are. It's happening for years now. We partner together for the sake of this neighborhood. And there are many others that I could mention. Here's the thing. I think if we're honest, I can't anyway imagine any other way of doing church. It's hard for me to think of a different way of doing it, because what we've seen over our time in these partnerships is that we are better for it, and the world is better for it too. That together we find strength that we didn't have on our own. And ideas come up that we never could have seen by ourselves, and resources are multiplied. And yes, it's messy. Sharing a building with two other churches is messy. Literally, sometimes, actually. It's like messy. Stuff doesn't get picked up, and trash cans don't get emptied. But we've always believed it's worth the mess. That there's something about this choice to collaborate that leads to strength, that ultimately leads to human flourishing and justice. So that's us on a corporate level. I want to ask you individually, because I think this has implications for both. I wonder, who are you collaborating with? When it comes to this call to act justly, who are you locking arms with? Because the truth is, you can't do it alone. If you try and go it alone, you won't make it for long. And I don't say that because I think that you're somehow like not a capable human being, but I just think you're a human being. And standing up to injustice is hard. And it takes energy. So who are you locking arms with? Who's that person or that group of people? As a church, we've made the commitment to innovate and to risk and to try and to fail, believing that God is faithful in giving us new ideas and new ways of going up against injustice, and we're committed to collaborating. And maybe those two things, if you've been around here for a while, they feel so like, yeah, of course that's who we are. Maybe you're falling asleep right now because you're thinking, what's the big deal? This is just who the branch is. But I want to invite you to kind of wake up this morning to the unique way that God has shaped us as a church. And to recalibrate your life. To have new hope that God is an innovating God, a creative God who invites us to join in that innovation. God's a collaborative God, God who brings people together for the sake of the kingdom. See, what does the Lord require of you? What does the Lord require of us? It's to act justly. May we be those people together. Amen. We're going to share in this meal here. And if justice is human flourishing, well, then this meal has a lot to do with justice. If justice is choosing to live our lives in such a way that other people